You're listening to East Tennessee's premier sports radio call-in show. This is The Drive.
We're working like heck.
And hello, good afternoon, and welcome to another stellar edition of The Drive. It's Fan Run Radio, Friday afternoon edition of the show. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, it has been a long offseason. Maybe the longest offseason. Definitely the longest offseason. Technically and emotionally, spiritually, otherwise, it's been a long offseason. But Bear, Trey.
Yes, sir.
1 week from today, we will be sitting. Well, I'll be sitting. Here in your White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Doing our first Football Friday show of the year. It's real. We made it. We've just about made it. Feels good, man. Feels good. It has been a long off season. Feels like years ago. We were sitting around getting ready for the SEC tournament. I think Trey was in Nashville.
The last sporting event I got to witness in person was Arkansas versus Vanderbilt basketball.
I guess you could call that a sporting event.
Disaster.
That was brutal.
No, man, let's not count our chickens before they hatch. I mean, games being canceled for this weekend already, and even the one decent game, it's kind of sucks because last week was, you know, you had a couple of fun games to watch. You had those upset games, and maybe we'll have some of those tomorrow. Like, we didn't know a week ago today that Iowa State versus Louisiana would turn out to be a fun game and a talking point, an upset. There might be some of those tomorrow. There probably will be. There'll probably be those types of games all year long because of COVID. And so we'll see what happens. But the one game that we're all looking forward to, Miami and Louisville tomorrow, that's apparently there's some concern there that one might be canceled. What, there's like one guy that didn't travel, and so they're testing and all this stuff. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But hey, we're here. We're on the precipice, man. We've come too far to turn back now. We have come too far to turn back now, ladies and gentlemen. College football season on the brink, and you know, we talked yesterday about what kind of Jeremy Pruitt would we see in his meeting with the media yesterday. And obviously with the Cade Mays news, he was a little bit more upbeat. But Trey, listening to some of your sources coming out of practice yesterday, there was a much more positive mood surrounding. Now, we'll get into some details. We'll really get scientific on it on your Rocky Top Report brought to you by the Craigner Group a little bit later. Got Cole Kubelik coming up here in just a few minutes. But Trey, some positive vibes, not just around Cade Mays, but getting a lot of guys back healthy, out of contact tracing. And I understand it was one of the, if not the best practice of the season so far yesterday.
Yeah, I was told they were flying around yesterday, energized, having fun. They were in shells, weren't in pads, but still, there was an uptick of energy yesterday, and I think that's good for Tennessee. Got a lot of wide receivers back. Got Aubrey Solomon back on the defensive line. Got Wanya Morris back on the offensive line. Mm. Darrell Middleton was there, but he was in shorts, so we'll see if he practices.
You can't play football in shorts. I'm no coach, but seems counterintuitive.
No, and they're all, and we'll get into the others, but they were still missing two guys that would potentially start in the secondary, but they, you know, hoping to get them guys back in the next 3 to 4 days. They did test again today. Today is Friday, so they tested again today, we'll get those results back probably tonight or tomorrow. So, yeah, good practice for Tennessee yesterday. They're going to try to build off that this weekend as they implement the South Carolina preparations, Bear.
Utterly outstanding.
Fantastic. couple of days to go. Bear the Cade Mays news. I don't know what to, you know. Is this one of those things? The infamous line from Pulp Fiction when they're cleaning up Marcus in the back seat of the car. They think they've got it all cleaned up, but they still got to transport the car to the dump. And the wolf says, "Let's not start gratifying each other, shall we say, just yet, boys. We've still got a long ways to go. We've cleared one hurdle." And this is so frustrating in the sports world. Nobody knows what they're talking about anymore. Everything's fake news. Oh, we thought, okay, the NCAA cleared them. Like, that's the big hurdle. Right? Oh, no. Now it turns out there's this other thing that we didn't even know about. Now it's like Greg Sankey. Anyway, it's frustrating. Are you confident, Bear? Are we going to get this thing done? Cade Mays going to be in uniform here in 9 days against South Carolina? Just, 8 days.
I don't have a really good feel for it, man. I'm really torn on it. You know that Sankey probably doesn't want to do it. Just how many guys have transferred intra-conference that he's approved so far? That's one thing that I couldn't figure out.
None that weren't grad transfers.
Well, I mean, no, not the one. Well, before that rule came into place about grad transfers, he did grant Maurice Smith the option in 2016 to transfer from Alabama.
I thought there was
Georgia.
A receiver from Bam or from somewhere that ended up at Mississippi State, maybe Alabama. It ended up Mississippi State. I don't know. It's kind of a Pandora's box.
No, it's not. It's not, because we're going to have the one-time transfer policy anyway next year. We thought we were going to have that now, but for some reason the NCAA decided to punt on that, probably because of COVID.
That doesn't necessarily mean that the SEC couldn't turn around and have their own rule about it, though.
Well, why would they do that?
To prevent teams within the conference from actively recruiting players on other people's teams.
That would be bad if that happened. Wouldn't want to open that box. Oh, come on, man. Like, if we're going to do it,
what do you mean? They're not doing it now.
You don't think that team
I think they've got to sit out of here, not like it would be if they're immediately eligible.
Yeah, but
you really want Nick Saban to come up here sniffing around toe-to-toe?
He's not going to transfer anyway. But you don't think that SEC coaches don't keep in contact with guys that they recruited? Say, hey, you know, how do you think we got Aubrey Solomon? How do you think we got Brandon Kennedy?
Kennedy was a grad transfer. Aubrey Solomon wasn't in the conference.
Yeah, but do you honestly think that we don't talk to these guys around the league?
I don't think it's not the same, Russ, as when you're talking about guys that aren't grad transfers that would become immediately eligible on a one-time deal. You know, what happens if Saban loses? The people that have the most to lose, I'll go ahead and tell you, will probably be, you know, your Alabamas, your Georgias, maybe your Florida. But, you know, mainly like Alabama and Georgia, you know, I sent it in the group text last night that the teams that just stack five-star after five-star, and some of those guys don't see the field, and they're going to want to play.
Yeah, but the flip side of that is the three-star that wasn't good enough for Alabama that comes to Kentucky or Mississippi State and wants to go to a bigger stage, knows he can play at that level. So, listen, I mean, we can come up with objections to this all day long, but
I want him to be eligible. You know what I mean? It's Cade Mays. You'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that wants to see Cade Mays, you know, in a Tennessee uniform and playing more than me. I've watched a kid almost all his life play football. I always wanted to see Kevin's kid play at Tennessee.
Well, none of that matters. Respectfully, none of that matters. Like, we're talking about a blanket rule that's going to come into effect anyway. And I haven't heard that anything to suggest that the SEC or any other conference is going to institute rules preventing intra-conference transfers. It's a one-time get-out-of-jail-free card. Everybody's going to have it next year anyway. So what's the logic in preventing not just Cade Mace, but Joey Gatewood and the kid that's going to Ole Miss too, from being able to play right away this year?
I just don't like it for interconference. If I'm being honest, I don't like it.
Well,
Right now if Toto had transferred to Alabama and we were going to have to face him this year?
I mean, I guess not well,
you'd be Maynardville mad, Rusty.
Okay.
Being a Roane County rage.
Okay. Well, you said
you'd
it earlier.
It's an outrage.
You said earlier, how would you feel if one of Alabama's five stars that couldn't get on the field this year, if we had a five-star running back jump in or five-star tight end where we're a little bit thin this year? I mean, it works both ways. It's going to work to our advantage just as much as it's going to work to our disadvantage. And at the end of the day, if we're being – altruistic about this, if it really is about the kids and it's about doing right by the kids, then we need to shut up about all this, oh, it's Cade Mace or oh, it's Henry Toto, and just say, all right, we all make mistakes and they should be able to transfer once without having to sit out a year.
There's a reason why Jeremy Pruitt and Mark Stoops in the last 3 days have both complimented the graciousness of Greg Sankey in their press meetings. So, you know, Kentucky's dealing with Joey Gatewood. Ole Miss is dealing with a player. Tennessee's dealing with a player right now. Sankey's got some moves to make. In my opinion, I know we got to catch a break. In my opinion, you can't grant one and not grant the others. You're going to have to grant.
Russ, how would you feel if there was a stipulation that you're immediately eligible for the next year, but you cannot play against the team you're transferring from?
That's what I asked yesterday, and you guys said no way. My position is I'll do what if it's that or he doesn't get to play at all, then I would take that deal, but.
Because after thinking on it last night, that's what I'd prefer.
He doesn't get to play against Georgia?
I wouldn't like it in this case, but, you know, if the shoe is on the other foot, I keep using Toto as an example, but I definitely wouldn't want to face Toto if he had transferred to Bama.
It's going to incentivize coaches not to treat kids poorly too. You want them to stick around, you got to treat them well. But
we got to talk about that picture last night. That really had an effect on me.
What picture?
That picture of Trace in some practice.
Why didn't I see
that dead-eyed serial killer look on his face?
I have to go back and look through these. Stay with us.
Ooh.
The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. Cole Kubelik of the SEC Network joins us next. I'm sure he'll have a thought or two on Cade Mace, as well as the rest of SEC football. 8 days out. It is The Drive on Fan Run Radio. Back with more after this.
The Drive. Fan.
Welcome back. The Drive continues. Russell Berry, Trey Cruz along with you on a Friday afternoon here on Fan Run Radio. Pleased to be joined now by Cole Kubelik of the SEC Network. Cole, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, doing great, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Hey, always appreciate your time. Cole, you are a connoisseur of all things SEC offensive line. Would love to get your take on the Cade Mace situation. He's cleared another hurdle. The NCAA says he's fine, but apparently now it goes to the commissioner's desk, Greg Sankey. What are your thoughts on this situation and the ultimate outcome?
Yeah, I think it's great news for Cade and for Tennessee that it's going to go to Greg Sankey. And I don't see any reasons that he would hold it back. But obviously, you know, they have more information than I do. And I think it could potentially be massive news for Tennessee. I think this puts them in the running as having the potential to be the best offensive line in the SEC. I think right now you'd lean Alabama. Kentucky would be in the mix for that as well. We'll wait and see what Georgia looks like. But I mean, Tennessee's going to have the best offensive lineman playing football this year coming back. They got a center with a ton of experience. You put another really physical guard opposite Trey Smith that has big game experience as well, along with Wanya Morris, which I'm a little bit concerned about considering the amount of practice that he's had. But it's got a chance to be really the strength of that football team heading into this season.
Cole, obviously here in Knoxville, Tennessee fans want Cade Mays immediately eligible. But there is a good devil's advocate point here, in my opinion. If we are going to have the one-time transfer, I could see where Greg Sankey and member schools would not want a situation where the teams are potentially tampering, you know, during the season. Hey, well, you're buried on the depth chart here. Why don't you come over here? Or, hey, you're too good to play at school X. Why don't you come up and play for a Florida, an Alabama, a Georgia, something like that. Is that something that Commissioner Sankey should be worried about, in your opinion?
Not in this instance, I don't think, because I mean, Cade was already playing a lot at Georgia. So I think that there's more to it in this particular situation. I do think that's something that long-term you look at and you wonder if that's an issue, and you don't want that meddling on other rosters. You don't want other rosters to be recruited by coaches and players from other teams. I think some of that still happens right now anyway. Even if a guy knows he's going to have to sit out a year. I played football from 96 to 2000, and there were other coaches calling my room to talk to my roommate when I was at Auburn. So from other schools, it happens. But, you know, I think that one-time waiver is something that I wasn't really a fan of to begin with. And the longer it's gone, I'm kind of to the point now where I think just let it happen. Let there be one out. One time where you can go play somewhere else, and then that's it. There is no family issue. You know, there is no concern about what's happening. I mean, I don't care if Meemaw's been zombified. You know, you're not going to a school that's 2 miles down the road. You know, you've already had your transfer. You know, there's no waiver. That's it. It's over. So, I think we're going to get to that point. I think that's going to happen, but I don't think you'll ever really stop coaches. Technically, what you and I would refer is recruiting players from other rosters because they develop those relationships. Sometimes it's the kid calling the coach. So that's just going to happen. And even if it's a one-time waiver rule and you had to sit out after that and the kid knows he's got to sit out, I still think you'll have coaches talking to certain guys. It's just going to happen.
Why do you think it's a year? You know, we've come up with that hard and fast rule. It seems to me, and we see this in basketball, oh, this guy's got to sit out X, you know, percentage of the season. What if you have a – just spitballing here, Cole. You know, you could transfer, but you got to sit out 3 games, 4 games, something like that, 6 games, depending on where you go or where you're at in your academic track record. Would that – something like that make sense?
Maybe. I think some of the technicalities would start to really, really get dicey.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could probably take classes that you didn't need to be eligible to the school that you were going to transfer and try to remove them from your GPA. I think there's a lot of things that could become murky in that scenario. You're going to have guys that are trying to transfer in season if that happens, and I think that's what you're trying to avoid, really and truly. Well, so I think you have to lay some sort of standard down that's just and this is what the NCAA lacks in a lot of areas. You have to lay a standard down that's consistent across the board. That's how you avoid, you know, situations like Luke Ford trying to go to Illinois, like Cade Mays trying to come to Tennessee, like Joey Gatewood trying to go to Kentucky. We don't know what all the differences are in those scenarios, but if you could blanket those with one rule that applied to everybody and there were no adjustments to that, I think that at least gives you some consistency across the board on what the expectations are.
Talking with Cole Kubelik of the SEC Network. And Cole, you know, it strikes me as we become mighty cynical about this because we're thinking about this all in terms of football and playing. Oh, this guy's buried on the depth chart at Alabama. Maybe he wants to go somewhere he can get on the field closer. Or this guy went to Vanderbilt and turns out he's a great player. Maybe he wants to go play on a bigger stage. But sometimes guy just wants to move closer to home. He's homesick. Sometimes I don't like this school. It turns out I don't. The classwork is too hard, or my girlfriend doesn't. You know, there are all sorts of other life things that can occur, right?
Yeah, there are a lot of things that aren't really safe for this radio show that we're talking about that happens. So why guys want to get out? You know, I think it's sometimes coaches don't like the player, and the player knows it. And that's not a comfortable situation to be in. So you want to try to find a way out. You want to try to find another opportunity. And I'm all for opportunity. When I played college football, I finished in 2000. The word transfer was a death wish. I mean, you didn't go resurrect your career somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe you went down to FCS and you found a way to be somewhat successful, and you might get looked at as a later round draft pick. But it really didn't happen. There just weren't guys very often. I mean, it was extremely rare where somebody would play for a Power 5 brand and then leave and play for another Power 5 brand and be successful, much less win a Heisman or be drafted number one or go start right away. It didn't take place. So I think you're going to see the NCAA begin to move more towards consistency in how they rule on things. The problem is going to be got guys like Thomas Mars that are still just going to come in and attempt legal action. No matter how you rule on things or how consistent you try to be across the board or how you try to blanket certain rules and try to govern things just one way across the board. And once people threaten you with lawsuits, that's when rules get changed and rules get adjusted. And people all of a sudden start to say, okay, we'll let this go this time. Well, and then 50 times later, we're sitting here talking about a situation like we are now and how ridiculous it is that one guy can get this and another guy can't get that, but this person was 0.25 miles too far away from the school's campus of where their address was. And I mean, it's just sometimes it gets a little bit discombobulated, but there has to be some consistency with it. And there are a lot of different reasons that guys want out. I'm not one that thinks you should encourage players to have an opportunity to leave right away. I would put some sort of a time stamp on it. Like, I think you should probably have to be on campus for a calendar year before you make this decision, before you're allowed to leave, something of that nature. Because we know how quickly guys get shell-shocked when they show up and they're not a starter, or they don't get the number they want, or they're not allowed to wear a visor, or, you know, the conditioning's harder than they thought, or they're going to actually make them go to class. Once all those things start to hit, you know, kids' feelings get hurt pretty quick. And that's when they make rash decisions.
Oh, this is Trey, and I really appreciate you joining us. And with the benefit, if Cade Mays does get eligible by Greg Sankey in the SEC, how big is this for Jarrett Garantano to be able to come back and know that, at least in his mind, he thinks he's safe in that pocket? He's got running backs in Eric Gray, Ty Chandler, and others to help him out, and they're trying to figure out the wide receiver room after some guys have been out for contact tracing. But just for Jarrett Garantano's, you know, mind, how big is that to know that your right side and your left side are probably going to be protected by two of the best offensive linemen in college football?
I don't think he should feel like he's safe. I mean, I think he should be safe for the most part. You've got 3.5 really legitimate proven commodities. I'll still go with sort of 0.5 on Wandae Morris because he has flashed and been really good at times, and I have the utmost confidence in his ability. But he did need to develop this offseason, and not having the spring ball and not being able to go through practice like everybody else has, I am a little bit concerned about what it's going to look like when he hits the field this fall. I'm not saying that he's going to give up a sack on every play, but you just wonder what the development process will be once he's asked to go live in games. But you'll have two of the best guards in the SEC, two of the best guards in the country, really, and a center that's played really good football, that has a ton of wherewithal, a ton of awareness, has been around for a long time, played a lot of college football, seen a lot of college football. So, you know, you anchor that middle the way that group should be able to, you kind of figure everything else out from that point. And that's why I said earlier, I think Tennessee legitimately – has an opportunity to end the season as the best offensive line in the league. And I don't think there's too many that can really say that right now. I mean, I think it would probably be Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky. And then I think you could throw Georgia into the mix. And I don't know if there's another group that I look at that really hasn't even an opportunity to be there by the end of the season, based on what's returning and based on what I've already seen, as far as what I know about how they're going to play.
When we look at the situation that, on defense for Tennessee and in offense, trying to figure out what Henry Toa, Jeremy Banks, and Kaferis Crouch fit into this defensive backfield at the linebacker spot, how crucial is it for Tennessee on that defensive line, Cole, to get more pressure than they did last year? It seemed like, you know, the first six games It was slow. They picked it up a little bit with some guys that had some motors. But does Tennessee have one of those monsters on the defensive line that you see at LSU or Georgia and Alabama? Is that what they're really lacking when it comes to getting to the quarterback?
I think so. And I think, unfortunately, for Tennessee fans, you're going to see just how good Daryl Taylor really was last year. He never seemed to get a ton of credit for being a guy that would consistently affect the pocket, but he did. There are a lot of schools that way. I think you'll probably see the same with Petulli and Warrior as well. As college football fans, we turn the page faster than anybody in any other sport. We have the shortest memories of maybe not greatness, but of really good than fans of any other sport. I've had a lot of conversations with Auburn fans about how they think their defense is going to be just fine, even though they recognize that Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson were great. But then it's like, you had three other starters in that secondary that are gone, that basically started or played a lot for two or three years. And that's a lot of awareness. That's a lot of wherewithal. That's a lot of recognition. That's a lot of communication that's going to be gone. But as far as a guy who can just – and it's not even really about pressure as far as getting to the quarterback. It's more about just affecting the pocket. Taking up passing lanes, removing windows, forcing guys to move, be off platform, make them uncomfortable. If you have a few of those, I think you'll be okay. I really thought Emmett Gooden was going to be able to be one of those, a guy who could really dent the pocket. And obviously he's not going to be a part of the team to be able to do that. But I know that's something that Jeremy's going to want to find. And I guess the good news if you're a Tennessee fan is Jeremy also knows how to be extremely creative with pressures. And if he's not confident with the front four to be able to get there, he will design things to be able to make that happen, and he'll force that. Somehow, some way, he will be able to make the quarterback uncomfortable. So I think you have to look at it might not be an individual that can consistently get that done the way that some people want. You might not have a Leonard Little off the edge, but you got a defensive coordinator and a head coach that knows how to strategically make that happen. Systematically, he can find a way to get to the quarterback, and I would at least have confidence in that going into this season.
Cole, last question for me, and I appreciate you joining us. We saw where the Houston-Baylor game has to be canceled. I guess we'll say, I don't know if postpone's the right word because I don't know if they can reschedule it. But we look around college football, we are seeing a bunch of games get postponed and rescheduled and move around. How have you, but then also the ESPN, the SEC Network, I know you guys get riled up and going next weekend, but how do you think y'all will approach, if you get on site and all of a sudden a game is postponed, just what's the behind the scenes look at the craziness of trying to figure out if they're actually going to play a game?
Yeah, it already happened to us. Being on site, I'm the only one so far with my crew that's traveled. So I guess it would affect me having to turn around and go home. But tonight we've got Campbell at Coastal Carolina, 7:30 on ESPN. Andre Ware and Tom Hart will be in their homes. And I'll be on site for the game. But we had Houston and Memphis this weekend. That was the game that we were supposed to have tonight. And that one had to be moved. So I think this is sort of the new normal. This is something to get used to. I do think it's laughable that a lot of people, all of a sudden want to go into shock or want to try to send fear across the sporting world, the fact that we're having to postpone and move some of these games. Especially when you look at Baylor, didn't even have nobody on their team tested positive. I need a little more information on exactly how this one tonight happened. I need to know where the kids were, what the kids said, what questions they asked, who admitted this. I mean, it's very interesting because I don't have all the facts on exactly how this one went down. I know a little bit more about how the Memphis one went down. I know the party bus thing's not real, but I do know that they had a couple guys that were positive. They know who else was around them, and therefore, because of certain positions just being decimated, they weren't going to be able to play. Contact tracing is going to be the phrase that we all need to be familiar with this season, because that's what's going to cost us games, and that's what's going to cost us cost teams the ability to take the field and even have an opportunity to go play. So it's not just going to be players on teams testing positive, which a lot of these people that if you follow them on Twitter or read what they say on Twitter are going to want you to think that medically the team is in dire straits and they're going to have to call in some sort of emergency plan, and it's just not the case.
So you're going to confirm it for us, and that's great. So the party bus did not happen, Cole. We can put that behind us, correct?
My understanding is that is not real, correct? That did not take place.
You know, any bus can be a party bus if you really put your mind to it. I just want to point that out. Cole, last thing here. What was it like? I saw you interviewing Billy Napier after the huge upset, and you're doing these socially distanced interviews. How has this changed your job?
It's definitely it's made it a little bit more difficult. My favorite thing about working sidelines is an hour and a half before games, just being on the field, talking to coordinators, talking to assistants, you know, seeing players up close, and I'm not actually allowed to step on the playing surface at any point in time. So an hour or 2 hours before the game, I cannot walk on the actual field of play. Now I can be on the sideline, so I still see things, and guys will still come over and talk to me sometimes, but it's totally different. It's very weird. You mentioned the interview portion of that. That's something that you do it one, two times. I think it's kind of easy to get acclimated to. It's not extremely difficult. But you know that you develop personal relationships in this business, in the coaching business, and when you're playing, in broadcasting and media, covering games, covering events, covering teams, players, and it's almost like you've not completely removed those relationships, but you've put a lot of space in between them, and you've made them very difficult to be beneficial moving forward. And that's not a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to be calling games. I'm excited to be working games. I have absolutely no complaints. I'm excited to be at Coastal Carolina tonight. It's the first time I've been to this stadium. Last week was the first time I've been to Ames, Iowa. So looking forward to kicking off SEC football next week.
Yeah,
so it's going to be fun.
No doubt. Tell Jamie Chadwell we said hello. Good East Tennessee guy right there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to tell you, if you want to see what I think might be the most unique offense in college football, check out what Coastal Carolina does tonight. It's unlike anything I've ever seen. And I mean, they legitimately run the triple option, but they have spread principles and pro style principles that go along with it. They're not a triple option team, but they do run the triple option. They can actually throw the ball and throw screens and run RPOs and throw the ball down the field. It's pretty interesting. The Shants are a very interesting offense to watch. I'm excited to see it in person tonight.
Cole, you've sold me.
I'll say the same.
Yeah, I'll be watching. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys.
Cole Kubelik of the SEC Network making his presence felt this afternoon on The Drive. Always great stuff with him. A lot to unpack there. We're going to take a quick time out. Why don't we continue? We talk about a data-driven approach to managing this crazy football season. One thing I've not heard anybody talk about yet, and they've probably talked about it, just haven't heard it, that with the contact tracing, I would love to know the numbers, and they've got to have hundreds of just in the SEC alone. If Tennessee has had 30 or 40 guys go through the contact tracing 2-week process, and if that number is, we'll say that number is like 12 across, average 12 across the conference, well, that's well over 100 guys. I would love to know how many of those players that did not test positive but were held out 2 weeks due to contact tracing, out of that group, how many of those people ultimately tested positive?
The thing that I would like to know, I'm gonna try and look it up real quick before we get too deep into it, is that's part of the reason I think that the Big Ten is incorporating the rapid testing results. I think that if you're using the rapid testing as well as the PCR, that may get you. I was led to believe it may get you out of the 14 days.
Well, yeah, if that number is really low of those players that went contact tracing, because as far as I know at Tennessee, it's zero, and we've had like 30 or 40 guys. If that number is really low, then, I mean, common sense would tell us that we probably need to revisit that policy. And it's one of those things where I'm sure the intentions were good. Like, I get it. It makes sense. Okay, you might not have it, but you develop symptoms a little bit later. You have 14-day incubation. Like, I get all that. But if none of that is happening, if that's not happening, players aren't going into the contact tracing ultimate, then we should revisit that, and we shouldn't be canceling games. And I realize we're all making this up as we go along. But anyway, we'll get back into that We continue. It's The Drive on Fan Run Radio. Russell Berry, Trey with you. Your phone call is coming up. 865-546-8200. Stay with us.
The Drive.
Citizens National Bank is the official bank of The Drive. It's Financial Freedom Friday. We linked earlier to a blog post they did about how banking with a local bank and actually be more business-friendly than making one of the big corporate behemoths out there. Visit our Twitter feed, at Fox Sports Knox, to find a link to that post. And again, you can read all their blog posts at cbtn.com. Citizens National Bank, the official bank of The Drive. Yeah, Trey, have you heard, have any of the guys that went into the UT's contact tracing protocol, not looking for names or anything, but like, have they have had any of those guys that Jeremy Pruitt's been so frustrated about, or they have to sit out 2 weeks, not even testing positive, have any of those guys ended up actually testing positive?
Well, you personally know of one. Well, we're not going to give that name out on air. You guys do. But I would say, I mean, no. I mean, Wanya just got quarantined twice. The rest of the players, I was told, were mainly just contact traced. They did have a wide receiver test positive. I mean, you could.
So one guy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So, and then you look at defensive wise, in my mind, I'm trying to think, in the last week and a half, they've had one defensive guy test positive, which though contact traced to another player, as you know, so that took them out. But yeah, no, I think I'm in agreement with where you're going with this.
I found what I was referencing earlier, or right at the end of the last segment. Dr. Borchers, I'm not going to scroll back up to this thing. He's the co-chair of the Big Ten testing. He's the he's an Ohio State doctor. He notes that daily rapid antigen testing essentially eliminates the need for contact tracing because as soon as someone tests positive, they can be isolated. He says there is a test on the market that claims to be able to diagnose a positive case below the threshold of contagiousness, which would theoretically, according to him, make contact tracing obsolete. But it's like everything, the system would rely on accountability.
Wait, so there, you can have the virus, but not like be trans, like you can't give it to somebody?
You can have the virus, but apparently your viral load, it can detect
load.
The virus.
Sounds so dirty.
It's below the threshold of where you're contagious with it. Well, what I'm getting at here is, if that's true, and you can, with rapid testing, eliminate this 14-day contact tracing thing, which really is really hampered Tennessee and really looks like it could really put a crimp in being able to pull off games as the season goes on, why would you not, if you've got this much money and this much riding on it, why would you not just everybody go to that?
You think we should go to the Big Ten model?
As far as the rapid testing, now, what I don't agree with, you know, they're a lot more draconian, maybe, as far as what happens once you test positive.
Oh, yeah. You're done for like a
and
month.
And then they get into, like, the rolling averages, and they've got a colored light, you know, like system, green, yellow, red, and, I mean, it's to the point where I think it's going to be really hard for the Big Ten to pull off a successful season unless they're counting on these rapid testings to eliminate the contact tracing problem.
All right. 865-546-8200 is your number. As always, if you want to jump on board, 546-8200. Let's go to the phones. Westchester up first today. Good afternoon, Westchester. You're on The Drive.
Hey, Russ, it's about 4 o'clock on a Friday. If you got any emails or phone calls you got to return to your clients or sponsors, go ahead and do that. I'm going to talk to Russ. I'm going to talk to Bear and Trey for just a minute. That's
man.
All right with you.
Dude, we got a football show going on. Like, you're not going to NASCAR us.
You don't have a football show anymore. You got about 2 minutes of
No, not going to happen. Not on my watch, Westchester. I've already heard Bear and Drew's Oasis Massacre on the way home yesterday.
I don't care about Bear and Drew's Oasis Massacre. Russ, I'm sorry that you have no taste in all things good, man. I can't help that. All I'm trying to tell you is it's Friday. We're up here in East Tennessee going to watch some Xfinity tonight and some Cup race tomorrow. And we're up here having a good time with 30,000 of our closest friends and family. And we're going to social distance. We're going to do it all right. We might drink a little beer. We might drink a little moonshine.
I hope you drink a lot because you have to be absolutely hammered to enjoy a bunch of rednecks running around in a circle with their IQs painted on the side of their cars, Westchester.
You know what? A lot of them drive a hell of a lot better than you can, Russ. I've been in the car with you. That's all I'm saying on that one, Russ. Russ, you couldn't hold the jock strap for these NASCAR drivers. Why would
you wear a jock strap when you're driving a car?
Because they're Tennessee fans. They got to keep their cup on. They're all Tennessee fans. Not just Bubba. They're all Tennessee fans.
If only.
You know. So, anyway, we're about to head over here to the trailer of our favorite driver and spend a paycheck on some merchandise. But, anyway, I just want to say hey and greetings from Bristol and hope you all have a good weekend and a good show because you know what? I'm sure as heck going to have a good weekend. Love you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Westchester. Westchester, are you going to get a 43 carved in the back of your mullet in support of?
No, wait till next year. Wait till next year. There's going to be a number change.
It'd grow back out by then. Right?
Yeah, it's only for a couple of weeks.
Good Lord.
I thought he meant tattoo. I'm sorry.
How hammered is Westchester right now? He sounded like he was borderline breaking your rule, Russ.
Too surprised he got a signal at Bristol.
3:52 on a Friday, I'd say Westchester's well on his way.
6 feet.
Well on his way.
You need to show a little bit more damn respect, though. I'm about sick and tired of you calling it redneck hillbillies and all that stuff in reference to NASCAR. Have some respect a little bit for the sport. Yeah, I know you don't like it, but I'm tired of the name calling.
Well, you show me a sophisticated NASCAR fan, and I'll show you a guy that doesn't exist.
Hey, you're talking to two. And
you show me a sophisticated NASCAR fan.
And Drew, he's a NASCAR fan. And another thing, you know, Trey are the ones that bounce. So what if me and young Drew had a discussion about Oasis?
Oh, okay. You want to know how sophisticated young Drew, as you call him, is? You guys aren't in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios with me, so you're not looking at what I'm looking at. Let me paint a picture for you. Drew walks in today wearing, like, these slim-fit, ripped-up black jeans with a bunch of holes in them.
Hell yeah.
And a
very Houston crest.
And a white Motley Crue t-shirt.
Mm.
That's your sophisticated NASCAR fan for you.
It's
here.
Stylish.
The Lord.
Very metropolitan.
Or is it now? The Lords of Los Angeles. Great band from back in the day. Livewire.
Great band.
One of my favorite bumpers we play.
If our producer wants to look good while he's producing the show, I don't see a problem.
He's our intern.
Exactly.
Let me just say, there's a reason you three dullards are on radio. I know I'm on radio, too. I used to appear on television regularly, I might add, before I took up with fan-run radio and you guys and this outfit ruined my professional reputation.
If you really want to
drag my good name through the mud.
You go back to exactly when you stopped getting your television invites.
Drag my good name through the mud. All you got in this world is your reputation. All you got in this world is your reputation. And mine has been shattered after 4 years at Fan Run.
Hasn't been shattered.
Never work in this industry again.
Everybody else in your family are doctors, and you hang out with us every afternoon. Which, by the way, congrats on your win last night, Russ.
Sounds like a you problem.
West High School. Where's Philly? I'm going to call in and laugh at you when Oak Ridge goes either beats West. Yeah, who's laughing now, Phil? Ha, ha, ha.
I mean, what? Outside of Caden Martin over at Catholic, I think West may have the best quarterback in the city.
Best that quarterback.
Sling it.
One of the best running backs. Probably the best defense. Stay with us.
We'll talk about it later.
The drive continues. Fan Run Radio Hour number 2 coming up.
The Drive.